It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Craig Beechler.
Now, how about that, sport fans? All of you who are familiar with the show over the years, you have heard Craig both on the show, in the studio with us, and you've also heard him on the line a couple of times. Big Jimmy Buffett fan, you know. So that was the last time.
Fins up. Yep, fins up.
You got it. Anyway, we'll get to that after the first segment, but Craig is from Cincinnati, where they have a kind of an interesting thing going with startup businesses, and most businesses can't get up the capital to succeed, basically. So they run out of money, they run out of idea. More money kills them, I would think, than ideas, because the supply of ideas is great.
Indeed, indeed.
And anyway, like I said, we'll get to that shortly. He is here. Of course, the number one reason to come here would be to do the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Obviously.
And then incidentally, while he's here, he is going to come in to watch his striped cats take second place to our spotted cats on Monday night.
It's going to be a tough battle, but without King of Baton Rouge, Joe Burrow, it's not looking too good for the remainder of the season of the Cincinnati Bengals.
No, but, you know, we would have gotten him anyway.
I don't know. Adam's seen the results up there at Paycor Stadium.
I did.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah. Anyway, to all the regulars, welcome back. Thank you for always being there. You're the ones that keep us doing this week after week as we close out year number 9 on February 1st. It's hard to believe. I wrote down the date. It said December. How can that be?
Yeah, it just flew by this year. I say that every year, but
yeah, it's beyond comprehension. Anyway, for the new people, stick around. This is going to be very interesting because we're going to get deep in the weeds on some topics that most people don't get too involved in. It should be a lot of fun because we're talking about money. Only this one, we're talking about serious money.
Yeah.
With hopefully serious returns.
And, yeah, that's the hope for every investor. But this is interesting because it's kind of like if you've done all the things you're supposed to do, if you max out your 401k, if you did your backdoor Roth, you did everything that you can think of and you're looking for other ideas of how to invest, this is one other way to do it. There's lots of other ways, but this is definitely one that that a lot of people are interested in. It's probably the hardest one to get involved in, just because the group of people that do it is very small and probably pretty tight-knit.
Yep.
But having someone who's been involved with it, I think a lot of people would want to know more about it and how to get involved if you're interested, or even if you're not interested, it's still an interesting topic to learn more about. So I'm looking forward to our discussion. We have another person joining us via phone from Cincinnati, and he is actually what is his position?
Steven would be considered a co-founder in the startup world, right? So he has two other co-founders, and all their background, and Steve, you alluded to before the show, a lot of talent and capital come out of a little company founded in 1837 on the banks of the Ohio called Procter & Gamble. Mm-hmm. And these three co-founders are all PhD chemists that came out of P&G to found the company that we'll be talking about today.
Awesome. And he'll be joining us right after the first break. Yep. So that I look forward to that as well.
Yeah, and everybody remembers my many discussions of the four factors of production: land, labor, capital, and entrepreneurism. Well, we've got two of those going on today. Yeah, the land and the labor, you guys can figure out. Anyway, we're not going to do a long market wrap today. I'm going to sum it up in a couple of words, and then Adam can sum it up with some more detail. That was fun.
It really was. It has been a very fun quarter, and it was another fun week. So it's probably been the best year that everybody hates.
Yep.
It's just unbelievable. I think there's a couple of reasons for that I want to talk about briefly, but I will mention first, the Dow was higher. It gained 2.4% this week. So that's kind of a reversal from what we've been seeing, where the Dow has been lagging the other two indexes, major indexes. But this time it led. S&P was up 0.8%, NASDAQ 0.4%. For the year, the Dow's now up 9.3. I believe it was negative like 4 or 5 weeks ago.
Not long ago.
Yeah, or almost negative, almost, at least.
0.2 or
something like that. The S&P is now up 19.7% on the year, and the NASDAQ's up an almost unbelievable 36.7%. So, yet it feels really terrible. I think there's two major reasons for that. One is the bond side of things. The bond market just recently, like within the past few weeks, got positive for the year. the annualized returns for the last 3 years are still negative 3, negative 4%, something like that. So if you have 40% bonds and they've been negative for 3 years, it's just been a major drag on your portfolio. Yep. Even last year was bad, this year even worse because the stocks are positive. And so it's making it feel less good.
Did you see the stat that bonds had the best week since? Do you know the answer to this?
No.
May of 1985.
Wow, that's a long time.
Man.
That is a long time.
Yeah, for sure. I think the other side of things is the inflation. So with everybody paying so much more for their basic goods, their groceries, their rent, it just, even though your portfolio is up this year, it feels like you have less money because you're spending more money. And so I think those are the two major reasons that people are consistently coming into our office. Clients are like, Adam, don't even tell me what my portfolio did this year. And then they see it and they're like, is that right? Really? That can't be right. It can't be up. But it is. And so it's been the worst feeling good year that we've seen and since we've been in business. Pretty interesting. It was a good week for the major indexes. It was even a better week for the small and mid-cap indexes. The Russell 2000 small cap index was up over 3%, while the mid-cap index was up 2.5%. We mentioned a few weeks ago that this type of outperformance would be possible, and here we are. Yep. That doesn't mean there isn't more room to run. Small caps have been underperforming for so many years now that there is still plenty of room for them to outperform.
Yeah, they got to rise a little more to get up to just beaten down.
Yeah, that's right.
We can look at moving forward.
It's been pretty terrible. International was pretty good, except for China and Hong Kong. Yet again, those two just can't get. It's just not. They just can't get it together right now. Natural gas down another 7.3%. Their total on the year 61% down. Just unbelievable. Silver and gold both posted large gains, and overall, it was a pretty good. Pretty good outside of commodities in China. It was a pretty good week all around.
Well balanced, in favor of some good things.
Yeah.
I'd love seeing the small caps thrive again. We need that as a country, as an overall economy. We need it really badly. So we're getting it.
Never a good thing when 7 mega cap stocks are driving the whole market. I don't like to see that at all.
No breath at all lately. It was kind of an upsetting thing. But that said, I think there's plenty of room for the market in general to grow, especially the little ones. And meanwhile, we're going to take one short break. We'll come back with a trivia question and get into some really fun stuff with Craig. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Craig Beechler.
And we will get to Craig in just a moment. But first, I want to introduce our trivia question for the week. Brought to you, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. In the past 12 months, Gen Z, remember them? Born in the late 90s and early 2000s.
AKA the Zoomers.
Yeah, they're kind of waking up in some respects. And one of the things that they've been noticing is they've raised their target age for retirement by 5 years in the last year. What is it now?
Okay.
What's that age now?
All right.
And this is not a trick question. It's just what Gen Z says.
All right. Well, now I want to dive into the real reason that we're here today. Craig, why don't you introduce your friend and hopefully he's... there we go. Okay.
He's on. Yep.
And introduce him and hopefully he can... tell us a little bit about himself as well.
Yeah, so for those of you who've heard me on the show before, about 11 years ago, I started doing angel investing with a group of people that I work with in my day job. And essentially, we'll work on forming SVPs or SPVs, special purpose vehicles, or syndicates, they're called, where you form an LLC with a state, you get a pool of money together, and you write a check to a group of or one entrepreneur who has an idea, a PowerPoint, and a dream, right? So in this particular case, this is what I'd call one of my portfolio companies, because I'm the second investor in this particular company. And the gentleman who's on the line is just an incredible human being all around in terms of having grown up in Trinidad and Tobago, moved to the United States for undergraduate in South Carolina, makes his way to UT Austin for a PhD in chemistry, and then lands, and although this, I may be biased in Adam as well, since we know each other through our gainful employment out of undergrad at P&G, Stevan came into P&G as a PhD chemist and worked with a group of incredibly bright individuals. And eventually, sometimes, you know, that big company culture doesn't fit everybody, but it's often a good way to start out. You kind of learn, if you've been around since 1837, you probably know a thing or two about running a proper business and bottom line and P&Ls. And they, I think, struck lightning in a bottle when they uncovered a way to harness nitric oxide out of the body. So Stevan Samuel, who is on the line here in Cincinnati, is co-founder of a company called Noxano, NOX, nitric oxide. So, Stevan, why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey and how you and Alan and Jacob founded Noxano?
Sure. Thank you guys for having me on. Craig, also, thank you. Thank you for the introduction.
Sure.
So as Craig alluded to, we started Noxano back in 2017. My journey has been exactly as you described. You know, you leave higher education, you go work for a Fortune 100 company, and you think that that's going to be the rest of your career. One of the things that struck me, and, you know, P&G does a lot of things right. One of the things that struck me, though, is that, you know, it just took so long for products to get to market. At the scale that they work at, that's fine. But we always had, Jacob, Alan, and I always had these ideas of, you know, wouldn't it be cool if we could? And because we all left and went our separate ways after P&G, there was an opportunity for us to come back together and see if we can execute on some of those ideas. And that's kind of where Noxano was born. We were able to take a reactive chemistry that we were all very familiar with and apply it to a real problem. In this case, Noxano has a focus on wound care. So we started back in 2017 with the goal of developing advanced therapies for the treatment of both acute and chronic wounds. And when you think of a chronic wound, think of, you know, your diabetic foot ulcer, pressure ulcers, venous leg ulcers, any type of wound where the body has a very hard time doing what it's supposed to do in closing that wound. We've been able to leverage the body's own chemistry in order to kickstart that process. And as Craig said, you know, when we chatted with Craig, we were three guys with a PowerPoint and smiles. And that was back in 2017. And we've come so far in that time. It's kind of amazing kind of to look back and see how far we have come. Right now, we're preparing for submission to the FDA on the human side for regulatory approval to enter the market with our Restore product. In the interim, we've launched a product on the veterinary market. This allowed us to, one, start generating revenue, which as a startup, you're always happy to do. But it also allowed us to get a product in the market where we can learn very quickly ahead of entering the human market, which is our true target.
Yeah, I think, Stevan, that's an interesting point when you think about if anyone's out there listening who is potentially in the position and has the access to invest in startups as an angel or a small PE or venture capital firm. You're looking at, you write a check and you have a lot of hopes and you sign an operating agreement. But at the end of the day, you got to trust the people behind the business, right, to do the right thing. And one of the things we look at as investors is what's the potential burn rate based on how much they raised. And I think people who are agile, which is one of the eight pillars at P&G, agility, like this group of three at Noxano, they were able to see, hey, the 510K route is going to be extremely expensive. Although the human market is the ultimate goal, we can jump leaps and bounds ahead and learn a lot in the animal market, because if you haven't noticed lately in the last 20 years, Americans love their dogs and cats quite a bit, and they also really love their horses too. So, Stevan, why don't you talk a little bit about, like, maybe burn rate, how you look at accessing additional capital to continue to fund the enterprise, and like where you are in terms of the veterinarian space now.
So in terms of our burn rate, I think the pandemic was ill-timed for a lot of reasons. On the human side, we were in the midst of our first on-human clinical at Riverside Methodist up in Columbus. And, you know, during the pandemic, you could not get a healthy volunteer to go into a hospital for an Amazon gift card. So we were forced to pivot pretty quickly. One of the things that we identified as a barrier was the fact that it would take us a very long time to get a human product into market, given the time taken to get through the FDA. So we tried to identify other adjacent markets, and the veterinary space was one that was particularly attractive. You mentioned it, Craig. People are spending more and more on their pets. I think one result of the pandemic is the fact that pet ownership also increased significantly.
Yeah.
And people were spending more and more on their pets. But the big challenge is that animals get, you know, a lot of the same types of wounds that are difficult to treat that humans do, and the risk of infection is incredibly high. One of the core benefits of our technology is that we have the ability to remediate infections without using antibiotics. That's because nitric oxide is a biocide that the body uses naturally, and we have the ability to deliver that exogenously. I joined the company full-time, and it's always terrifying quitting your day job to throw everything in behind your dream. But we had our animal studies up at Ohio State, and when I saw that we were able to clear a fully formed biofilm with our product with no topical or systemic antibiotic, I came home and I told my wife, like, all right, I guess we're doing this.
Instead, Stephen, at the time you'd matriculated out of Proctor into a consulting gig,
yes.
Right? When you talk about biofilm, you're talking about actually these punch wounds in porcine skin, which has five layers, like human stratum corneum on down, mm-hmm. right? And we're talking about inoculating it with some type of bacteria. Is that right?
Yep. So just to get into the nuts and bolts here for a second, what we were doing, we had a burn wound that we essentially cauterized to restrict the vascular blood supply to mimic a true diabetic foot ulcer, because in those types of wounds, the vasculature is compromised.
Sure.
So the body can't bring what it needs to. And then we made a punch wound in the middle of that burn wound after we inoculated it with a pseudomonal bacteria that formed is a known biofilm former. We waited until the biofilm was fully formed, then we made the punch wound, and then we treated. And we were not only were we able to remediate that biofilm, but we were able to heal the punch wound through the flap as well as the burn wound around it. So that was pretty powerful for us. I think biofilms are a significant challenge, not only in veterinary medicine, but on the human side as well.
Yeah.
And especially now, given that the industry as a whole is trying to move away from sort of antibiotics, over dependence on antibiotics, because it's giving rise to a lot of these resistant strains, we now have the ability to give another tool to these physicians, where not only are we driving healing, but our product will also help remediate that infection that you have. So getting into the veterinary space was a good way for us to really test a lot of these hypotheses, because, you know, you can tell a person, you know, keep your foot off the floor, you know, keep it clean. But animals are a lot more difficult.
Yeah.
A lot of times, vets just expect these wounds to get infected, and they do. We've had a lot of cases where the one vet recommends amputation. They go to a vet using our product, and we heal the wound in 6 weeks. And, you know, the pet owners are overjoyed, and then the risk of that amputation being an outcome is completely off the table. So we've had some really good learnings. I think right now the veterinary health business, we're trending towards being cash flow positive.
Excellent.
It's still a work in progress, but we've come a long way as a new product in the market for just over a year. I think we've made significant strides.
That's fantastic.
But on the human side, we're pushing to get our submission into the FDA.
That sounds really expensive to do what you've done in a year. Is that a fair statement?
That is definitely a fair statement.
Okay. How did you finance that? I mean, obviously Craig was involved with that. How did all that come about?
So fortunately for us, I think when we started the company back in 2017, you know, the market was significantly different. When we came to, I'll take Craig as an example, when we came to individuals like Craig, who saw the benefit and the potential for the idea, they were very interested. I think the ability for us to raise the capital that we needed from high net worth individuals, small angel groups, has funded us all the way to where we are today. We've only taken on one sort of institutional investor in the time that we've been doing this. And we've been very fortunate because, again, a lot of our investors are physicians who see the utility of the product. They want to be able to bring that product to life because they want it in their clinic. And so that has been a way for us to get to the development that we've had thus far. It's very expensive, and you know, we're making a product that you can drop on your foot, right? It's not software as a service where your overhead
yeah,
is pretty low.
Definitely. We're up against a break. I do want to delve more into this after the break, but we're right up against it. So let's just hold on, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
All right, sure.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Craig Beechler.
And without any further nonsense, we're going to go right back to the phones and pick up the discussion that we left a few minutes ago. So take it away.
Steven, we were talking about really the finances and some of how you're managing burn rate, launching into the veterinarian space, and trying to manage your cap table, if you would. Cap table for folks out there, capitalization table is a list for every startup that has the amount of money that was put in, when it was put in, and what percentage of equity you bought into the company. And then there's an operating agreement governing that. And just as a little aside, if you want to do any research on your own in terms of the entrepreneurship, startup world, investing, a great book to grab is Brad Feld. He's on his fourth edition. He's a MIT grad, about 60 years old, lives in Boulder, started a great accelerator, we call them, where you can apply to get into them, and they'll maybe do some financing for a percentage equity. And also the Kauffman Foundation. The Kauffman Foundation is essentially the governing body of the startup world. And one thing you'll know is what they say is in 3 years, 7 out of 10 startups go to zero. So if you write them a $50,000, $100,000, $250,000 check, there's a 7% chance you won't have that money in 3 years. Obviously, as investors, we think we're smarter than that. you got to have a couple unicorns, if you would, or 10Xs to pay for the losses. I've had my zeros. I've had my not zeros that are paying the bills. But it's always a risk you take, and you never should be investing in any types of startups or businesses if you cannot afford to take that loss.
Absolutely. That is so true. And I'm glad you brought that up, because this is not something that you should do unless you can. If you're putting money at this, you can't afford to lose, you're doing it wrong.
That's exactly right. Like Adam said in the beginning, the basic blocking and tackling and working with a firm like Van Wee Financial of your 401k, your IRA, or your backdoor IRA, making sure all that is done, and your 529s, whatever it may be, with your family situation, that has got to come first. This is like, okay, I've built up enough of a nest egg or whatever, maybe got a little inheritance money to play with. Now I can maybe write checks in this world. So, Steven, as you have worked on the cap table, I think you guys worked with a accelerator out of Columbus. I know I have a picture on my phone of you guys, three of you in a lab with one of your early prototypes. Maybe walk us through a little bit of the accelerator life and then get back into the veterinarian and how you're doing in the veterinarian space and what's next for Noxano.
Yep, sure. So the accelerator that you're referring to was Rev1 Ventures up in Columbus. And, like back when we were in the PowerPoint phase, we were running all of our experiments either in Alan's garage or Jacob's basement.
Right.
We quickly got to a point where we realized we couldn't order chemicals online because they didn't deliver to our residential address. But it is surprising what you can find at Michael's if you know what you're looking for.
If you have a PhD in organic.
Yeah.
So we needed lab space. And at the time, Rev1 had facilities for us. We went there and we became a portfolio company for them. They're the only institutional type investor that we've taken on. And that was just part of the deal, becoming the portfolio company. But it was instrumental for us to get to that first prototype. It was also instrumental for us getting to our first set of animal models where we were able to actually test these in vivo. So that journey, I think that was a very necessary step. Those early prototypes took us beyond the PowerPoint phase, and it allowed us to then, when we chatted with investors, have something tangible that they can touch, feel, visualize, and see this on a patient. A lot of investors, some of them, they understand the goal of where you're trying to go. But when you put something physical in front of them, it makes that a lot more tangible. So
right.
We were able to raise capital very early on with a lot of very savvy investors. And I say savvy in the sense that they were, one, it wasn't the first time they'd invested in early stage companies.
Sure.
But more importantly, they had a passion for wound healing, because I cannot tell you how many of our investors on our current cap table, we sit down to talk with them and they're like, oh, well, my mother has had this thing that's been open on her ankle for the last 18 months.
Right.
It feels like we're always at least one degree of separation removed from someone suffering from a diabetic foot ulcer. So a lot of folks, they want to do good. If they can make some money while they're doing that, that's great. But they want to make sure that that money can help benefit, civilization as a whole. And I think that's what's particularly attractive about what we're trying to do. With respect to everything after 2020, I think 2020 is when, we began to see, that funding become a little bit more difficult, definitely not as difficult as it is now. And it forced us to do two things. One, we said, all right, we're going to be pre-revenue as long as we are still waiting to submit to the FDA. Until we have that approval, we can't sell on the human side. How else can we generate revenue in this interim? And that's when we pivoted into the veterinary space, because again, the FDA has oversight over that market, but it is not as closely regulated, and it's a little bit less stringent in terms of getting your product to market. A lot of our vets love when we say, we started this on the human side and tested it on people, so now it's safe enough for animals.
Right.
And that resonates with them. And a lot of these translational technologies, they're used to seeing stuff come over from human. So when we got to that point, it became, one, how do we preserve the existing capital that we have? And we had to make, a lot of really tough decisions to make sure that, one, we prioritize our runway and extending that runway as far as we can.
Yep.
To make sure that the company can continue to move forward. And then, two, how do we generate revenue to offset our need to capital raise? And I think the veterinary health business, of course, has its own expenses, like Biggie said, more money, more problems.
Yep,
once we started generating money, then, we transitioned from this phase of how do we build the things and now how do we sell the thing, right? And I think a lot of that required us to learn very quickly. How can we don't have to, the P&G marketing team department to do stuff for us. So we had to learn to do it ourselves as effectively as possible with an eye towards maintaining capital efficiency.
And I'm learning, I'm looking at the guy to my right, Adam, who, left big corporate world, whether it be P&G or Cemex, and the comfy positions we have sometimes at these Fortune 100 or 500s. Steve and his co-founders had to do the same thing, right? These people have families, they have children to raise, they have spouses to answer to, and to think of leaving a cushy, steady, stable, big job to start a scientific, right, a bio-type startup, and the amount of capital it takes to raise, you're talking about potentially not having income for months, or maybe you have
sometimes years.
Maybe you ratchet it down because your burn rate's too high, and you know what? You're eating ramen. That's not exaggeration. These guys are, no offense, they're not spring chickens, right? These are experienced, extremely bright people. One of the co-founders, Alan, he's one of the global experts in electrochemistry, right? He's the kind of guy you go to these meetings, you see him on the podium, right? So these are not lightweights in this world. And to take this on, to have a passion project like this to potentially revolutionize wound healing is remarkable. And I'll say my background, my day job is historically over the last 15 years been in the medical device space, and it still is. And I work in with some of the brightest people on the planet, interventional cardiologists, vascular surgeons, sometimes an interventional radiologist or two. But these folks intimately understand what Steven and his co-founders are trying to do, right? Which is change the way that people treat these non-healing wounds, right? Whether it's a venous ulcer or whether it's arterial flow. The fact that they did these studies on the porcine model where they did electrocautery to stop the vasculature or the blood flow. Blood is everything. Blood is healing, right? Blood is tissue. And it's really remarkable how this particular product they developed, how simple it is and how effective it is. So in terms of going into the vet space, Steven, what has that been like? Commercialization? Walk us through that.
Yep. So we entered into we made the decision to really hammer down on getting into the vet space back in the back end of 2021. It took us a while to get, our manufacturing up and running, but more importantly, I think just breaking into an unknown market as a new product. I did not have a true appreciation for how difficult that would be.
Oh, yeah.
Initially we thought we would go direct to consumer. We built a website, everyone is going to be able to just buy our stuff online. But then we quickly realized that is not the way that veterinarians buy. Those aren't the channels they buy through. So we spent a lot of time getting on board. Right now, we're on shelf with the top four distributors in the U.S., and we have we've expanded our brand awareness just through trade shows and talking to vets and getting our hands into the our products into their hands. And the big thing for me, you talk a little bit about, you know, yes, sometimes we you talk about eating ramen. Yes, I feel like I've eaten more ramen now than I did almost in college. But one of the things that keeps us going is passion, right? Because sure. We meet so many vets who will, you know, first off, don't ever look through a vet's camera roll because it's all just like pictures of these really tough, challenging, disgusting looking wounds. But vets come to us and they use our product. If we give them a sample, they go away, and then we get an email, you know, like 3 months later out of the blue. Hey, I used your product on this case, and I can't believe that this thing worked. You guys, I'm going to spread the gospel of what right. you guys are trying to do. And like that, you know, it's not, it doesn't put money directly in my bank account immediately, but it does fulfill me and give me that motivation to keep going. You know, if we had a product that did not work, I wouldn't care.
Right.
right? You know, because it doesn't make the impact that I wanted to. But the number, we've treated hundreds of animals in the last year. Everything from elephants to camels to Komodo dragons, you know, people keep throwing our stuff at wounds that they have basically given up on, and we are able to take them to positive outcomes. So in terms of the progression across the veterinary market, I think next year is going to be a very big year for us because this was sort of year zero in sort of introducing our brand and building that ground base.
Yeah, and there was a couple, I think a couple zoos even reached out to you, right? As you mentioned, some more exotic animals, and that the word, the mm-hmm. gospel is spreading of Noxano and understanding how quickly and simply and effectively this product can work. And I think that's one of the more beautiful things you have in a, when you invest in a product, when you can see it, like you said, it's tangible, and now you actually see it start to work in biological organisms and more complex in terms of animals like this.
When we get back from the break,
yes.
I would really like to dive into what everyone really wants to know, and that's, okay, we're all in on the idea, how does it pay you back? How do you make money? How does Beechler make money? I think that's what everyone wants to know. So if we could touch on that when we get back, that would be great. We're up against a break. We'll be right
back. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Craig Beechler.
We will get back to our guest, but first, we have a phone call. Good morning.
Oh, no.
Yep. That didn't work.
That didn't work at all.
Oh, darn.
And we lost our guest. So that was a total fail.
Seemed to have a little crossover problem.
Just here. Call back in. That might be him now.
Maybe this one. Have we got you?
Morning, gentlemen. This is Greg from Avondale.
It is Greg. All right.
Yay. Hey, good. I apologize for losing the other call, but we did get you, and it's coming back. So what's on your mind today?
Well, I wanted to welcome Craig to Jag's Country.
Hey, man. Thanks so much. Good to hear from you, Greg.
Yeah, likewise. I was just actually looking at an old email that I have of yours back from I think June of 2020.
Okay,
that sounds about right.
Yeah, so right after, well, right during COVID. So I first of all, thank you for the discussion this morning. It's great, and I almost feel embarrassed by cutting in here because of the other gentleman you have on the line who sounds extremely fascinating.
Indeed.
Yeah, so I'm going to try to see if I can get to my question really quick.
Okay.
There was a book that you had recommended a long time ago, and you mentioned the author's name earlier, Venture Deals.
Yep, Brad Feld.
I consider Venture Deals by Brad Feld and Jason Mendelsohn. I consider that as one of the Bibles for anyone that's thinking of getting into or having a startup. The other one is the 10-Day MBA, and I think those two are critical for people like me who may not have who don't have an MBA but have an idea. So one of the things that I found through my experience, having gone through the trying to get a product into the marketplace, is that not every idea you have, you may be able to get a patent on, but doesn't necessarily mean that it's marketable.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So I'm looking at one of the quotes from Brad's book. He says, "We believe the demo or a prototype, often called an alpha, is far more important than a business plan or financial model for a very early stage company." So I want to try to bring this down to maybe the 10,000 foot level for somebody like me. I think, Craig, you kind of, maybe you remember that I had a product for the pet industry.
Yeah.
Nothing like what you guys are talking about, but more of a rudimentary, you know, product. And I really went through and went to all the shows. I talked to all the, not all, but many of the major distributors in the country for, you know, just generic product distribution. And I have the prototype. And so if you could kind of talk about that, I'm happy to take the answer off the air. But it's just, it's going from that point where you have the prototype, you talk to, you know, people of potential distribution.
Right, you talk to them about the idea and what you have and what the potential market potential is for that product?
Well, see, that's where that pivot point is. You know, that's subjective. I mean, just because I have a belief doesn't mean it's, you know, all you can do is use the best research you can find out there. But even that is not 100%.
For sure.
So, you know, I'm trying, you know, in my particular idea, I was trying to get from that point, you know, I talked to distributors. It was during COVID. You know, a lot of them weren't willing to take on new product because no one knew what the future was like. Mm-hmm. And then
I think all of this lines up really well with what we're talking about today, because I think they went through the same issues. They talked about getting that prototype and how key that was. And it sounds like maybe they had a little bit more success with marketing their prototype versus where you got, Greg. But I think that all of what we're talking about today is almost exactly like the beginning stages of what you went through as well. So that's pretty amazing, you know, such different products and different ideas. But I'd like to flip back over to him and just talk a little bit more through how that process went, if that's okay, Greg.
Yeah.
Good.
Absolutely.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, always thanks. Good to appreciate talk it.
Okay.
Thanks for calling, Greg. I'll follow up with you. Just send me an email. We can talk about it more after the show. But we're just kind of rotating back to Noxano and Stevan. And Stevan, you're going to kind of walk us through that veterinarian channel, where you are, and then also maybe what you're seeing in the space. And ultimately, how do the investors make money in this deal?
Sure. So to address the caller's question head on, you know, I think the size of the market is one thing, but more critically, I think the problem that you're solving, whether it's for human physicians or vets, that becomes the key linchpin, right? You have to have a solution against a problem that is important to them. And I think that's what resonated with us. When we went to distributors, we got the same pushback. We started just giving samples out at trade shows, and eventually vets were using our product and they loved it.
See, I think the market has spoken, if you will.
Well, that was the difference, I think, is that you were actually able to give them a product. They went and used it, so they field tested it for you and then gave you the feedback. Whereas what Greg was saying is he just went and pitched it, and I don't think there was something he could leave with them for them to test out.
Sure.
So that's a pretty good idea that you guys had and were able to execute on.
Yeah, and I think it speaks a little bit towards having at least some vision of going beyond just that initial proof of concept prototype to really what that MVP looks like, right? What is your go-to-market product? You can tweak it afterwards, but the packaging, everything has got to look like something that they're used to.
Minimal viable product for you out there.
Yep.
That makes sense.
You leave Proctor, but Proctor doesn't leave you. the vets are the ones that generated the demand and pressured the distributors now into stocking our product. And I think that was a big breakthrough for us on the vet.
Oh, nice! Yeah.
In terms of how how do you make money on these things? So again, remember our eventual goal is to launch a nitric oxide therapeutic within the wound healing space in human medicine.
Sure.
There's one other company that has been pursuing this. I think they're called N30 right now. They used to be Adiximed, Craig, back when we pitched you.
That's right.
With our PowerPoint. They were recently acquired by Convatec earlier this year for the initial deal was $56 million U.S. just to acquire the technology. We have very similar technologies. Of course, I believe ours is superior because we can deliver nitric oxide for much longer. We have greater control than they do.
Sure.
But they mirror what we have, right? You know, we have a product. We have it patented. It's been tested. The difference between us is that I think within the UK, they were able to get to some human clinical data earlier, which I think definitely was a help for them. But Convatec became the first. They're a global wound care company. I think they might be number two. They were the first ones to actually put a flag in the ground and say, we believe a nitric oxide therapeutic in this space for wound healing. The total deal was about $215 million. So they got $56 million up front. This is pre-regulatory. They still have to work out regulatory in the UK as well as the US. But then there was another $160 million, I think, based on meeting those regulatory milestones and some commercial goals.
Sure. And that's very common in the medical space, by the way, where, you know, you get acquired early, and then there's royalties along the way based on hitting these certain clinical milestones.
Yeah. It what made it a little bit surprising, I think, is that with the market and tightening recently in the last couple of years, investors are now waiting more and more to see demonstration of traction within the marketplace before they jump in.
Sure.
This is what made the Convatec acquisition that much more outstanding, is that as a wound care company, Convatec realized the potential for nitric oxide therapeutics because, you know, our approach to healing has barely changed, you know, since you guys kicked the British out, right?
Yeah, well,
cover the wound.
Yep.
You clean the wound, you cover it, and you hope that the body can do what it needs to do. We are trying to change that by developing a therapeutic that actively stimulates the body to turn on its healing machinery. So with that Convatec acquisition, I think it finally put a number on what the market believes a therapeutic within the nitric oxide space and wound healing is worth. And I think they're eyeing a launch in 2025. So that, I think, these next couple of years are going to be pretty instrumental in terms of nitric oxide therapies.
But I think that
successful ones entering the human market.
I think that answers the big question, though. That $200 million price tag is, I see how you could make some money from that.
Yeah, potentially. That could have a nice return on investment, ROI, as we call it.
Definitely. Well, right. Unfortunately, we're out of time.
Yep, we need to wrap. Thank you so much. All right, a couple quick things. I'd be remiss not to mention Charlie Munger. Craig has been in love with Berkshire Hathaway for all of his life, basically.
So. I can't tell the story, but in 2005, my first meeting, I got to ask Charlie a question in front of 25,000 people and Warren. It was wonderful.
Good, I'll learn more about that. By the way, you Gen Z people out there, you've raised your target date 5 years.